Indie Prime, yes, Indie Prime, on Indie Live Radio. Indie Prime, yes, Indie Prime, on Indie Live Radio.
Welcome to the Indie Prime podcast on IndieLive.radio. And this week we have a special broadcast from Orkney. So I'd like to welcome guests Robert Leslie and Fiona Graham from Orkney. A very good day to you.
Hello.
Hiya.
As an introduction for the benefit of listeners, would you like to give a wee introduction about yourselves and start with Robert?
Well, in my day job, I'm an energy officer with Orkney Housing Association. So covering stuff like energy efficiency of work properties and dealing with, you know, fuel poverty levels in Orkney, which are too high. Elsewhere in my life, I'm a community councillor in Kirtle Insatola here, and I play for the Bite Band, which obviously in lockdown at the moment, the only thing that we're doing is practicing in our own homes, along with, you know, Facebook Live or whatever. So no parades in the foreseeable future there. Yeah, I've been involved with the independence campaign since 2012, when YES Orkney was born in May 2012. And so it was just 8 years old, just short ago there. So that's a body that would be reinvigorated from any other independence campaign.
And Fiona?
Well, campaign for Scottish independence since I was 10 years old. When my parents were involved in it, and that was back in Edinburgh. I now edit Orkney News, which is an online media format. I've been doing that for the past 3 years. It's non-political, and I'm not a member of any political party anymore either. The YES Orkney group was very, very active up until recent times, and I'm sure as soon as a referendum or any other campaign was launched, it would be back up and running very quickly.
How do you feel that an independent Scotland would benefit Orkney, and what attributes would you be looking for?
Okay, well, I'll just say that one of the barriers is centralisation. And certainly the Lib Dems are very good at using that. And yet we have an Islands Act, which means policies and public bodies have to look at how things will affect the islands. It's sort of limited in how it's used, actually. An independent Scotland, I mean, we've got a vast country, and it would really need to decentralise. That's what I want to see. I don't want everything just going into Edinburgh and it being yet a sort of mini version of Westminster. An independent Scotland would have to decentralise, and Orkney, well, it leads the way in renewables and so much work done. We've got three universities located in Orkney. All of that needs to be recognised in an independent Scotland. You know, we are the gateway to the Nordic regions and the north.
I agree with a lot of what Fiona's saying there. And a while back in 2013, when the Our Islands, Our Future conference was held in Orkney, which preceded, you know, that there were offers for the Scottish and UK governments to the islands at that stage, which in Scotland became the Island Act, as Fiona said, got an island minister and things like that in the Scottish government now. But the one way that I always held on to, that Orkney, Shetland and the Western Isles could benefit from independence, was at the point that Scotland was renegotiating its relationship with the EU, islands could gain more autonomy at that stage. So if we're looking at greater powers over marine resources and things like that, that would be the time to do it, you know. And there were examples given of places like Holland and other islands at that conference, where they have far greater autonomy for the country that they're governed by, basically. So that's an opportunity that I see as, you know, being really good for Orkney, Shetland and the Western Isles in terms of decentralisation, as Fiona says. At the moment, the renewable generation capacity that we have in Orkney and that also exists in Shetland and the Western Isles is being stymied by UK energy policy. It doesn't work for us, it works against us. When we were talking about that during the general election campaign in December there, I ended up being the candidate for Orkney and Shetland for the SNP, and that was a plank that I used a lot, was to try and illustrate how that policy works against us, because having the highest fuel poverty rates in the UK at the same time as generating more electricity than we can use, it's just a complete travesty, really. It's an embarrassment, really. You can, so
yeah.
We need a change policy to make sure that everybody's got a warm and, well, an affordably warm and comfortable home, which I think is just a fundamental right. I think it's a very positive thing to think that we would have far more powers over the decisions that we make locally here. I mean, even, but I think maybe 3 years ago, when there was a committee for the Scottish Parliament up here, and it was Rhoda Grant that told James Stockton for Orkney Islands Council that she'd been out in Bushry that day as part of their visit, and she said, "Look, Bushry would like decentralisation, so the ability to for a local authority that would have more powers to then." Give more powers out to the communities would be part of that too. So, you know, if you could tell each island and parish and whatnot that a deepening of democracy would be part of the whole thing, and they would have a far greater say and probably better more resources to deal with issues on their doorstep, I can't see what's no attractive about that.
I think we need to build this into a constitution, because one of the most powerful things I think there would be, particularly we've just had the Declaration of Our Growth being commemorated, is a constitution for New Scotland. And I think more power to islands and local communities should be part of that, recognising the sovereignty of the people of Scotland. I think that's what an independence campaign needs to go with, a new constitution for Scotland and more rights for the people. And one of those rights would be the right to food and the right to be able to heat your home without going into poverty. So we want to eliminate poverty. There shouldn't be such a thing, for goodness sake, in Scotland. So that's what I would like to see, a new campaign built around a constitution. Like our MPs, for goodness sake, they should not be going back to Westminster. For one thing, it's not safe. And secondly, I would like to see them as part of a convention, along with members of civil society, develop a constitution, discuss it and get that. Because you don't need to have a date for a referendum to get that process started. And I think the whole discussion's being formed around a constitution for Scotland, led by those we've elected, our MPs, would be very powerful.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm looking forward to the time that they start forming an assembly. It has been spoken enough about, but nothing's happened. And I think especially during this period of they were coming out of lockdown as of today, I would have liked to have seen a lot more progressive work and conversation with the public of Scotland starting as soon as possible, ahead of a referendum, of some of the opportunities available. So the constitution is definitely one of those we need ground rules that people can understand, appreciate and agree to.
People need to have something positive, but you know, everybody's realised how important mental health is with this lockdown, and even people who feel relatively strong mentally are struggling to cope with this. And a positive campaign built, starting with, let's look at our constitution. What do we want our Scotland to be like? Look, that's a really good way forward for any campaign.
You spoke about mental health, Fiona. Obviously, during this lockdown, it has been trying for many people, especially people on their own. Orkney has got a reputation. I believe it's been voted the most happiest place to live, or the best place to live for quite a few years. Could you give me some background of how this period of lockdown has been for Orcadians?
That topic came up after we'd finished our quiz last night, our online Zoom weekly quiz. We did have a discussion about the fears that we have when this lockdown is lifted and properties start coming on the market. That Orkney having recorded, or you know, officially recorded, very low levels of infection during this pandemic might be seen as attractive to move into. And we've already had that issue in the past, because these surveys come out telling us that Orkney's the best place to live frequently. And I think a lot of the locals actually slightly get tense about the whole thing, because that's what it tends to do, is attract folk that have been able to sell up properties in the Scottish or UK mainland or further afield, maybe even, and buy up properties at prices that local folk can't afford. So that's an issue that we need to be aware of, is that while working to attract folk in that are economically active and things like that we're no burden in Wales, where folk that are maybe just coming up to that, they've either retired or coming up to retirement, they come up without their families, and there's nobody there to care for them in their later stages of life. It's a definite issue here, because we've already got an ageing population. So as much as we're happy sometimes to think that we're a reasonably safe place to live, there's a balance to be found there. And as I already said, we've got very high levels of fuel poverty, and there's other issues from there, and you know, domestic violence and things like that that exist in other communities, you know, that are here too. As Fiona's already said, poverty shouldn't be an issue in a place like Orkney at all. So these are underlying issues that need to be dealt with too, while we are quite happy to be seen as clean and green and safe to live in. We must be very aware that there's a number of folk in Orkney that struggle for day to day to put food on the table.
Fiona, have you got something
like
to add?
Like everywhere else, you know, we've got a food bank, and use of it has soared, and that's mainly with, well, before the lockdown, people in work. Because Orkney also has extremely low pay. So, yeah, you've got a combination of fuel poverty, low pay, a lot of seasonal work. So tourism is massive here. And, of course, that's gone with lockdown. We were supposed to have 140-odd cruise ships this year. And while I've actually enjoyed them not being here, because you know, the tour buses and whatever, it's really quite an issue on our roads, because they're single track. But that's a huge loss of income, both to all the people that do little tour guiding jobs, taxis, bus operators, shops maybe in Kirkwall that get money off them, big sites like Scarabray, the Historic of Scotland ones, they're all shut, you see. So that's actually a huge loss of income for the islands. Marine harbours, big loss of income there from the lack of ships calling in. So the effect of the lockdown on the economy locally is huge. However, like Robert said, we're not really wanting people to start coming in here just because we've got, what, 7 confirmed tests. 2 people died in Orkney from COVID-19. And we have a spanking new lovely hospital and things like that. But, you know, basically the structures can't cope with a lot of people coming in. We've already had the problem in the past with Airbnb and a lot of holiday lets, which meant students coming to the islands, to our university institutions, couldn't get places to stay. People actually coming here to work struggled to find places to stay as well. So, yeah, we've got problems like everywhere else. And being in lockdown for mental health has contributed to all of that. So, as Robert said, same problems as other places, domestic violence, all the rest of it. And actually, because you're in a community, it's actually really difficult for people in those situations. We don't want to rush out of lockdown. You know, we're not wanting an influx of people coming in too soon. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is exactly the same story I was hearing from the Western Isles, which we did the Western Isles special last week. So very, very similar stories. And if it's looking like a country, should we say. It makes the islands look like a country. Because, you know, should we say on the mainland, we're feeling the same thing. But there's a great fear of a massive influx from England, and people thinking, oh, they can just come here and purchase property that's only occupied for a limited amount of time, raising up property prices, or in this situation right now, carrying the virus up and spreading it and giving us a potential of a second wave. Yeah, very similar stories. A point I would like to ask now, Orkney and Shetland seem to have a lot of Lib Dem support, and even though it's been waning, it's always something that is observed with interest of why it continually votes Lib Dem. I say myself, actually, before 2014, I used to vote Liberal. For me, it was a token vote of protest because I wasn't going to vote Tory and I wasn't going to vote Labour, having seen the policies of both. And then, obviously, I began to see through the Scottish Parliament how strong the SNP could deliver for the people of Scotland. But Orkney and Shetland seem to be a little bit behind in still completely catching that on. That message. So why do you keep on electing Lib Dems?
It's a difficult one to answer that, but it's another member of Yes Orkney that also, she was a local councillor here too, Fiona McInnes. She talked about, you know, Orkney being slightly politically immature in terms of debate and things like that. So during the referendum, we found that when we were speaking to folk, you know, we got offers of folk going to the islands to go door to door, speaking to folk. And in some islands, folk just wouldn't speak, you know, when they were asked, you know, if you got the woman of the house maybe coming to the door, she wouldn't speak about what she was going to be voting. And she said, oh, I'll have to ask my man about that, you know, if you're meeting that kind of level of debate and, you know, interaction, that maybe tells you a wee bit about why, you know, we've not really grasped that thistle yet.
I would say that the Lib Dems are actually really, really good at getting their message across, and they're very good at putting out press releases. They get into the local media a lot. So people that are maybe still only buying a newspaper once a week on a Thursday, the local one, that's what they'll get. And the everybody sort of like buys it, the patches, matches, dispatches, but, you know, it's got the commentary in it from either Alistair or Liam. So there's that. It is one of the great mysteries of our age, why people will continue to vote for a party that can't actually deliver anything at all. There is a dislike, which is also another mystery in a lot of ways of the SNP, and yet it has the largest membership by far of any political party in Orkney. I mean, the Lib Dems don't have many active members here. Mm-hmm. Their leaflets pour through the door via the Royal Mail, you know, so they spend a lot as well. They target seats. And they don't have that many to target, but they do so very effectively. So their campaigning is really effective in Orkney and Shetland. And they get out to the islands in an election very quickly. And all those islands are postal votes only. And people who do postal votes, they vote almost as soon as that comes through the door. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge issue, but it is a kind of mystery why they continue to vote in even somebody like Alistair, who's not particularly well liked. Liam MacArthur does have a big personal vote, but Alistair, I just wonder about it now, because his voting record when he was in the coalition was dreadful.
Well, my own MP at that time was Joe Swinson. And the one thing I learned from at a local level, see, I was voting Lib Dem all my life, as I say, more of a protest vote, because you're entitled to vote. But in my case, the local community wanted development of a park area, and we needed the locals here to form a charity to deal with the council to get this park enhanced. And I was a treasurer of that charity, and we worked hard, us locals, and we got the job done. And next thing, Joe Swinson turns up, and a photo opportunity, taking all the glory. She was never involved at all. And that's when I woke up. That was my way. And it needs personal involvement. It's when you have a personal experience of how backstabbing someone can be in taking glory for other people's work, and as you say, Fiona, not delivering, because we had such a history of non-delivery. Also, in relation to Liberal Democrats, I feel a lot of the position that we're in right now, as far as Brexit, lays on the doorstep of Jo Swinson, because had she been more forthcoming to working with SNP and Labour at Westminster and gone against that Conservative minority government, we might have been in a totally different position than we are today, with facing a Brexit cliff edge as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, lockdown's been bad enough. Wait till Brexit hits us at the beginning of next year.
With the 2021 Scottish elections coming up next year, would you like to see anything stronger towards helping the Orkneys being proposed by the SNP that would encourage more people to consider voting SNP in the Orkney Isles?
I don't know what could be promised to help on that, but the ferries, it's just a continual battering ram that the Lib Dems use. So if there could be some movement on that, that would be helpful. But the issue around that is that, as far as I can make out, Orkney Islands Council just go to the Scottish Government with proposals to replace our ferries with a sort of light for light basis, like monitor hull ferries. And there seems to be a blockage there somewhere, that the catamarans that they have been running across the Bentland Firth, it's going to be a lot more sustainable, energy efficient, you know, fuel efficient, and so on. And there seems to be a blockage against even considering them for the inner island routes in Orkney. So that's an issue that maybe needs to be looked at, because we've seen figures for replacement of the present aging ferry fleet in Orkney anyway, with catamarans that would be far more efficient, could hold far more. They have a bigger deck space because of the two hulls, so the issue around that in Orkney at the moment is the lack of vehicle capacity on ferries. So it addresses that, uses less fuel, would be more adaptable to using like hydrogen or even battery power because of they need less power because they sit higher in the water. And so there's a lot of technical background that makes the case for these. So I think that's something that needs to be looked at seriously going ahead, you know, and if we can help build a case for looking at alternatives to just replacing the fleet as they are and, you know, a financial model for that, that's maybe something that would help. But at the moment, there shouldn't be, you know, just within the civil service maybe and things like that in Edinburgh against that. So there's maybe a bit of work to be done on that.
Fiona?
Well, for one, I want to see the 2021 Holyrood election with the first issue being Scottish independence. I think it's got to come out bold and proud on that. Both any political party that stands like the SNP or the Scottish Greens that wants independence, that should be there at the forefront. For Orkney, Robert's right, particularly with the inter-island ferry fleet, it's ageing. There's no Ro-Ro to North Ronaldsea, so things get craned off and on. It's ridiculous. You know, yeah, that inter-island fleet needs replacement. So that would be work for our shipyards to build green, energy efficient, modern ferries. If we're not going to get fixed links, that is. There's another thing. But certainly, that would be a huge, great campaigning issue for Orkney because outer islands, you know, some of them are struggling, some are doing better than others. But the cost, if you live on one of those islands, even with the reduced fares, the cost travelling to and fro, getting anything to them, the time it takes to get to them. All of these are big issues for keeping those communities sustainable. And if you want to run a business on one of those islands, you know, transporting your goods in and out or whatever, it's a big issue. So I would say, yeah, the inter-island ferry fleet, a programme of replacement, if not fixed links to some of them. Be ambitious.
Talking about being ambitious, has there been any feasibility study into basically duplicating what's been going on in the Faroe Isles where they've actually been linking the islands by tunnel?
I think Orkney and Shetland have both done, you know, they've both looked at the potential for fixed links in the past, and like even in Orkney, some of the fixed link ideas incorporated tidal turbines. So, you know, they have been looked at, but I don't think there's anything up to date at the moment, you know, in terms of, you know, something that would be, I hate that term, but shovel ready, you know, if the money came along or anything like that. So it's not there at the moment. It's largely based around replacing the ferry fleet. The one thing that could run alongside that heading towards 2021, I was encouraged that the Orkney Renewable Energy Forum the other week had Robin McAlpine for the Coban Wheel on speaking about the Common Home Plan. So if you get a group of folk in Orkney that are receptive to these kind of ideas, that as he said during his presentation, that, you know, that even includes, you know, the need, you know, some of these ideas need independence for them to happen, you know, and folk weren't speaking against that during that meeting, because that obviously covers as well as transport. Because you talked about, I think, hydrogen ferries that night. You're talking about homes, building, you know, heating, electricity, the food, land, resources, all these different sectors, and the human capital to make all that happen. If some of these ideas come through into SNP policy, and I've been keeping an eye on the fact that there's an SNP Common Wheel group, and you know, seeing how that goes, some of the proposals that are coming through to see how they, well, we need to then, you know, find a mechanism to get these policies into the SNP manifesto then, and that might be some alternative online to version of a conference or whatever to do some of these things, you know, to promote these policies. But a lot of these would align with things that we'd like to be seeing happening in Orkney anyway, because there is an economic recovery group meeting, and as far as I could gather, I've not been part of it, but they've been having some interesting discussions around the circular economy and so on and so forth. We should have had a sustainable Orkney conference, which was one of the early casualties of the pandemic that was cancelled. It was supposed to be in the back end of March, I think it was. And yeah, it was a weekend conference looking at setting a baseline basically for reducing our carbon footprint, you know, in Orkney. And that work's got to progress in some shape or form as we come out of lockdown. And the Renewable Energy Forum are having another meeting just this coming week, looking at how we emerge out of this situation. And, you know, I guess they'll be looking at all these ideas around a Green New Deal. And when I was sitting in on a net zero week set of webinars the other week, this Build Back Better was the phrase that I kept on hearing, which was new to me. And it is, it's pushing sustainability and green recovery up the agenda. And, you know, it seems like this is a message that people are keen to hear in, you know, the boardrooms and politically. So we even had an ex-Tory minister talking about, in terms of energy efficiency projects for domestic properties, the government, the UK government, he was talking about having to be far more hands-on and making decisions on how that money's spent rather than just handing it over to the private sector. And when you get talk like that, you know, for a Tory minister, you know, they're talking about a national programme, basically, of energy efficiency. I mean, Scotland's already ahead of the game on that because we actually fund programmes, and that was recognised that England don't have a publicly funded thing. It's all done through the energy company obligation, and that's been a bit disastrous in some areas. So all these things coming together ahead of a campaign next year would be helpful.
A lot of that funding has come from the EU, and I'd bring up here farming and fishing, because at the moment we're kind of in this in between stage, but come the 1st of January we'll be out totally, and probably with no trade deals. Now, Orkney fisheries, it's inshore fisheries, it's lobsters, right, really badly affected by delays that might happen at transporting it to EU countries. Farming, basically, the wee small farms will not be able to survive. So that's like many, many farms in Orkney are small, still family-run farms that produce quality beef, high-quality grass-fed beef, you know, that's sold the world over, built on its quality. Now, these wee farms, no, because the EU funding will have gone, right? There's no way the UK is going to prop up farms in Orkney just to save a Lib Dem skin, because they've got to think about their own big farming industry in England, which is completely different to what we have in Scotland. So I think farming and fishing, yeah, big campaigning possibilities there for any independence-minded party that was thinking of 2021, because the only way we can deal with those two sectors is with an independent Scotland, whether we're in the EU or another kind of Nordic alliance-type situation. If, you know, only an independent Scotland can negotiate those deals.
No, I mean, the Scottish government have these targets for increasing food production and so on for, I think it's up to 2030, at the same time as the farming industry's got to reduce its carbon output. So the farmers were already, when we were speaking to them back in sort of November, December, you know, they were already feeling put upon by some of these documentaries that were appearing, hammering the UK for beef production and whatnot, which is done in a completely different way. Well, it was really looking at international beef production. And as Fiona says, the type of beef production that's done in Orkney on grass is a fairly different kettle of fish. And I think at that Sustainable Orkney conference, we were going to be looking for farmers to show, you know, how they are a far more sustainable operation than would be suggested by some of these programs. So I think we need to encourage the local agriculture industry to become that sort of niche quality beef producer, and certainly mark the most of the story that they've got to tell, because they've got a good story to tell in terms of that sort of green background.
Because in the last fortnight, we've had the UK Parliament voting for lower food standards, but it's been good to read a Scottish producer saying no, they're going to keep the standards high or even higher than EU standards. Yeah. How do you feel going forward regarding future independent Scotland and EU membership?
Well, it's up to the people to decide, so you have to put that to the people. You can't assume they'll want to be in the EU or anywhere else, although Orkney had one of the highest votes for remaining in the EU, which is an interesting point, a campaigning point for the SNP at any future election, because we're out anyway. So our voices are ignored. But yeah, it would depend on what a future Scottish government could negotiate, what kind of deal a nation so resource-rich as we are could negotiate with the EU or any other place. But we have all the structures there that would allow us to slip in, I would think, quite easily.
Yep. Obviously, it has to come to a referendum. We have to be offered a referendum and given the choices of what type of membership we want, whether we want no membership, whether we want EFTA, whether we want full membership. The people have to be given the choice.
It goes back to that whole thing about opportunities around greater autonomy and just taking that decision-making down to a local level. And, Orkney and Shetland and the Western Isles are already, well set up to negotiate on our own behalf, thanks to the Our Island, Our Future campaign, because if we can keep the focus that was built through that, through 2013, right through, we've got a good basis to work off.
What's your thoughts ahead of how 2021 might turn out as far as a vote is concerned? Because there seems to be a lot of polling at the current time of the strength of the SNP, the support for the SNP, and how Nicola and her cabinet have managed this current crisis. A lot of people have been impressed with it. And we also have the elephant in the room, which is not going to go away, of talk within the Yes movement of a party standing for the list seats in the regional vote in 2021. Some people support independence but will not vote SNP. Some people support independence and they won't vote Green. So it's giving another option on that aspect, that though I think on most occasions when it has been discussed, because of the precarious nature in the borders and also in the Highlands and Islands, numerous parties that have come forward have said that they wouldn't stand in the Highlands and Islands or the borders. But do you have any thoughts on that?
No, really, no. I mean, it's a difficult one because going back to 2012, I'm a relative nipper in terms of campaigning for independence compared to Fiona, because I've never been a member of a party up until after the referendum. But once I got involved in Yes Orkney in 2012, I've always looked at what political setup was going to benefit Orkney most in my mind, and that's why I ended up, you know, joining the Yes movement, because I was definitely enthused by that Our Ireland, Our Future campaign, and independence seemed to be a necessity for some of that. And then I did join the SNP in November 2014 then, and we've gone through a period where the SNP were really, you know, kind of, I mean, they've been described in the past as a toxic brand in Orkney and Shetland, and I think we're maybe over that hump now, you know that there's a far more acceptance and willingness for folk to stick their head above the parapet and say that they would support, even in 2017 when Murray and Brett stood. I was part of the backroom campaign then, trying to get folk to back her, you know, publicly, and people came forward more willingly in 2017 than they did in 2015, and then even more so just in December then, when I stood, you know, I just noticed exponentially almost more folk willing to say, I'm voting SNP. I mean, we were deluged with folk that were willing to do a sort of wee thing saying why they were voting SNP this time. We promoted that on the Facebook page. I think Cara and the girls, they were putting these wee things up every few hours in the days up to the vote. That would never have happened 5 years ago. I can guarantee folk would have said, oh, well, I'll be voting for you, but I don't think I'm going to be going public on that, you know. So there's a huge difference. So as for the need for another party, I don't know. I joined the SNP because I saw that as the vehicle to get independence. And when it comes down to it, we'll probably switch back. There'll be a whole lot of SNP members that will pull on Yes Orkney T-shirts, and there'll be other folk that will join us that have never been a member of a political party in their life before.
Yep.
For the campaign, and there'll be more Yes Orkney T-shirts on the street than there was last time. There was a lot last time, few that ordered up, yep, batches and what. And I can positively say that, you know, young folk left, right and centre that I'm speaking to at the moment in Orkney, and that my daughters that are in their 20s are speaking to, they're all for independence. It's a generational thing. I don't think you'll find many Lib Dem voters in among that group.
Yeah, because I certainly find, me even personally myself, I find it far easier campaigning under a Yes banner than I do under an SNP banner. We have both stalls, and if you we have a wall that we can't seem to break sometimes on an SNP stall, but we can under a Yes when you say, well, you're not party affiliated. And I was the same as yourself. Well, probably slightly a month early, I joined the SNP just after the no vote in 2014, and have fought hard since then in any direction I can. Simply for me, it was, I couldn't believe that Scots could be gullible enough to believe English lies and promises, you know.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, even in the last few days, we've been getting, members of the family have been getting messages from folk that were definite no voters before. They were all for the union, whether they were Labour or Lib Dem or whatever. I knew they're saying, you were right, you know, basically, you know,
I can remember a story from your Orkney, actually, just after the no vote, and it was, I think it was a farmer who'd posted, and he did a postal vote, and he'd sent it in about 3 weeks before the vote. And of course, before the election, so before the referendum date, the vow came out. And then immediately after the referendum, when the English vote for English laws was the first thing on David Cameron's mind, he turned around in the media and said, if I'd known what the UK government was going to do, I would never have voted no. It would definitely be there. And so many people are in that position.
Yeah.
Hopefully they can be wiser next time round.
Yeah, I mean, in Orkney there is actually a councillor who's Scottish Greens, but at any national election there's only two parties really in Orkney, and it's Lib Dem and SNP. And I mean, 2021, that'll be the fight. It'll be between the Lib Dems, which represent the unionist side, and the SNP for independence. So it'll still be your yes-no divide. And there has been a shift in Orkney, definitely. I've seen that myself. And people are thinking about the implications of Brexit hitting them, and they've seen this Tory government, who's now got a majority so it can do whatever it likes, introducing things like the rape clause. Alston's report last year on poverty, that was damning. So we've got all these things happening. We're in a different scenario than we were in 2014. So I'm very positive about the direction things are heading. But people do need focus for that. So we do need to move on it. Now is the time. You know, we can't keep delaying that.
Yeah. Could I ask one question about influx of activists? How does it go down on the islands where you suddenly have an influx of activists from other areas to support an election? Would you prefer that island, when you talk about the islands of Orkney already having a substantial number of activists, what sort of impression does it give when you have maybe an influx of activists from other areas coming and knocking doors? Would that go down against the grain, shall we say, to potential voters, that they would rather speak to locals rather than speak to someone who's flown in from somewhere else in Scotland? What's your impression on that? Because the reason I'm asking is basically there was a massive influx for the by-election up in Shetland last year, and I wasn't particularly convinced that the impression of having a mass influx of activists just appearing because this is an important by-election was actually welcomed. What's your thoughts on that?
I think you're always better with local people, even on our other islands. If you can get, Robert's been a candidate, he knows, so going round those doors with people who live there, because they know the issues, and every island is different. But it is that, you know, your neighbour talking to you thing. And that's far more effective than a person that's face is unfamiliar.
That's what I thought. That's why I was asking the question, because I think it's relevant going forward that has to be borne in mind, that sometimes support is fantastic. It's great that people are willing to do that, but it's local voices that matter because they know local issues.
Yeah. I mean, we were very clear when we went up to, I went up to Shetland, you know, there was a very different picture for the general election campaign. It was winter and it was a short campaign, etc. You know, it was a more localised effort, and the same in Orkney. We've never had an influx of folk. I mean, I was very happy to have Christian Allard visit for a day when I was campaigning. And that was really nice to be able to tap him around the doors and speak to folk, because he's obviously had a great authority on the fishing sector, and a very affable guy. But all our folk were local, and they did a great effort given the lack of daylight at that time of year. And I think if we get a May election campaign and get out on the streets, you know, with local faces, that's definitely the way to go. And as Fiona says, we've got a lot of numbers in Orkney now, like the SNP branch grew from double figures up to over 200 I think it's sitting just over 200 at the moment, you know, so if we can get even 10% of that folk out and about, that's a great help. And next week's branch meeting, I just saw the email notification for that, and they're encouraging folk out of the Phil Islands to dial in because it's a Zoom meeting, and you know, this is great to have, if there's anything good that's coming out of this present situation, it's the connectivity that's grown up across Scotland within Orkney and so on, that allows you to speak to folk fairly immediately and very clearly. And you know, if we continue to use technology like that, it can only be good stuff.
Well, it certainly helped for myself, and it's a help for everybody at Indie Live Radio. Well, Robert and Fiona, I would really like to say thank you, a sincere thank you on behalf of Indie Live Radio for your participation, and great to hear the points of view from those from the Orkney Islands, and certainly look forward to hearing a lot more in the future. So thank you very much indeed for your contribution.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Cheers.
Indie Prime on Indie Live Radio. Indie Prime.